Alright, everybody. Welcome to the end of the hallway and the Wednesday, October 3rd, 2018 Historic Preservation Commission meeting. We'll begin with roll call and introductions, starting on my left with this gentleman here.
Alex Gall.
Michelle Kapitanovich.
Robert Hines.
Sean Denniston.
Andy Gregg.
Rock Manley.
I'm Peter Grimm with Scott Edwards Architecture.
I'm Keith Jones, the City of Vancouver.
Jan Bader, City of Vancouver.
Camp, Clark County.
Sarah Nubantobing, Clark County.
And let it be noted that Sarah Fox is running a little bit late, so she will be showing up here shortly. All right. So because Sarah's running a little late, we will skip the first item on the agenda, and we will move down to the Vancouver Heritage Overlay District Review, since we're all set up and ready to go with that. This is for the Quinn Building at 911 Main Street in Vancouver, proposal for exterior changes to the building. And Keith, would you like to start us off here?
Sure. So the building located on Main and Evergreen, the southeast corner, it is not on any registry, local or national registry. It is in the city's heritage overlay, so that requires advisory review with the HPC tonight, and so that's why we're here, to hear the applicant's presentation. We'll take notes, and then at some point the applicant will make application for design review, and then we'll review the project at that point and then issue it. It'll be a type 1 decision.
Okay, so yep. It's just a preliminary feedback.
Correct.
On the project.
Yep.
Great. Okay.
Okay. Welcome. I guess that's
take
my
it away.
Cue.
I guess I'm sorry.
So yeah, once again, I'm Peter Grimm. I'm with Scott Edwards Architecture.
Welcome.
And thank you. Pleasure to be here. I have a couple of handouts. I thought I'd just pass these out. You may already have part of this in your packet, but there's just some larger images in there that might help a little bit in our conversation. I've also got copies of our packet that we submitted for this meeting tonight. I'm happy to hand out more.
They've got them.
Does everybody have those as well? Audience.
There you go.
There you go. So I'd like to start with the history of the existing building, and my co-pilot, who was originally scheduled to present the history of the site and building, had a last-minute family emergency. So I'm going to do my best to give you the bullet point version of that. And then we'll pivot into kind of the architectural design concept that we're proposing. So I guess any questions before we start on the history of the building? Have you guys had a chance to look? Is this the first time that you guys have seen our proposed design?
No.
You've had a chance to get your ammo ready.
Yeah, I reviewed all of the materials that Keith sent.
Okay, sounds good.
Absent.
So, so let's dive into the site history. So this was originally built, and so the building we're talking about is at the corner of Main Street and Evergreen. Okay, it's the currently referred to as the Quinn Building. It was originally built as in 1955 for JCPenney. It was a department store. I'm imagining there was an earlier building on that site, but to our knowledge, we don't have any historic record of that. You folks may, the county no doubt, do somewhere. For the purposes of tonight's conversation, though, I think it's really this is the germane to talk about what's there currently, because that's kind of what we're proposing to modify. So it was, JCPenney was there until about 1979, and at that time the Vancouver Mall was constructed. They then moved their operations along with all of Main Street America from the downtowns to the suburbs, or out of the historic Main Street. And from the 1980s, so in about 1981, the existing, and just to kind of come back a little bit, I'll just show you these images, and then we'll talk about what was done to the building in the early 80s. So this is a view looking up Main Street in 1964. You can see it's kind of this classic mid-century podium building, if you will, with a glassy retail presence on the street level, and then I can only assume kind of the old school department store on the upper stories. I don't know. It may have been warehousing. Don't know. Sort of like the old like Meyer Frank model where you had, or even IKEA today, where you control the whole environment and whatnot. But in any case, it was a department store. It had kind of a nice proportion, I would say, architecturally. Kind of light. I mean, big box, but with a light base. And had originally had a masonry finish. Okay, had brick on the street-facing facades to the west and to the north. The south and east facades were just plain concrete, which is typical of the day, right? You had a property line here, and you had originally kind of a lovely theater building, actually, in the back, which is subsequently torn down. I don't know the history of that. But it is now a public parking lot. And so these two facades remain to this day. The front two were modified in the early 80s. So again, just some nice kind of source photos from the 60s and then in the early 70s showing the character of Main Street, the blade signs, really prominent, and a lot of activity back in the day. Kind of cool. In, let's say, 1981, or thereabouts, best we can tell. They, I think in an attempt to kind of rebrand the building, they took off most of the brick, like 80% of it, on the street-facing facades, and they placed this kind of dark, I've actually got a larger picture of it here, storefront system on there. They also punched some large openings on the second and third floors to get light into the building interior and convert it to office use. Okay. For the most part, they left the ground floor alone. I don't think any real substantive work was done yet. Okay. And that, is, and then from the 80s to until today, it had a number of different office and service uses on site. I think at one time there was a bank in there. There, you guys may know this being in the community. There was a translator service at one time. There were some other interesting office service type uses. Okay, and that persists to, and that's the building we see today on the street. Okay, so that's kind of, that is my kind of bullet point in a nutshell history of the Quinn Building from the 50s until today. So far, so good. Comments, questions, additions.
Quick question. So, kind of looking at this first picture here of the building in its glory back in the 1964, I guess it was. Is the yellow brick that's still apparent on some of the facade, is that what this material is in this picture?
Yeah, right here.
That's the yellow brick, and that's the same yellow brick that's still present today?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay. Thank you.
Yeah. And you can see the anchorage of the old blade sign in the brick. That's what tells me that's original.
Right.
Other than the proportion is identical, the reveal is the same. That's just simply a reveal in the brick. It was kind of nice for the day, actually, give some texture, because otherwise it was just a windowless box. There was not a lot going on. It was just this statement piece.
Yeah. Mid-century retail brutalism.
Right. Exactly. Yeah. Lots of examples of that. Unfortunately, when they did this really erased the character of the original building for in large part. I think it you know, there's still a ground floor, pretty good balance to work with. The upper floors, the window openings that are cut into the building are different sizes, they're kind of irregular. The brick was removed, most of it, so there's a bit left, but it's been substantially altered, let's put it that way. I wanted to also point out the mural was added. I don't have an exact date, but at some point this was put on to the back part of the building as well.
and is obviously still there. And I think for completeness, the back is really unchanged. It's painted blue. Currently, there's a small back door, essentially. And then this is a shot of the original recess entry at the retail as well.
Is any part of the back building part of that old castle theater building?
No.
So the entire castle theater was demolished?
Yeah. Yeah, the dividing line was right here. This
elevator tower back in the corner, is that what it is?
Right here?
Yeah.
That's basically rooftop penthouse. Mm-hmm. Yeah. The older, let's look, let's go back and look at the theater. You can kind of see that corner there. Right here. I think they added this maybe in the 80s remodel. They kind of added this strong kind of eyebrow element to frame that storefront. It's like a sheet metal coping treatment.
It's more of a box.
What's that?
Make the box a little bit more of a box.
Yeah, right. Box in a box.
Do you know when the building ceased functioning as a JCPenney's?
I believe it was 1979 when they moved to Vancouver Mall.
Actually, it was August of 1977.
Okay. Same problem, sir. August 77.
Yeah. And I had another question. Why did you think it was called the Quinn Building?
Yeah, I was wondering that too.
That is the name that we have used since we've been involved with the project for the last couple of years.
Okay, I think it was formerly a furniture store, and it was run by a family named Flynn.
Prior to Penny's or after?
Prior. When Penny's was on the west side of Main Street.
Okay. So, yeah, so that's a modern, that's just a current.
Okay, but to call it the Quinn Building from now on, I don't know if it has any historical basis.
Okay, that's totally fine and great, and that's the identifier that we're using currently.
Oh, okay.
So it wasn't, I didn't want to imply there was a historic connection to that.
It's what you're proposing to call it under the renovation.
Yeah. So.
Why Quinn?
So other questions about the history of the use? Thank you for the clarification on the Penny's history. I do think it's interesting that they built it in the 55 downtown. Sort of right at, this is another bigger conversation, but right at the time when everything was really shifting, that post-war out in a way, so they were kind of, I feel like they were like hedging their bets, and like, oh, this might work, and then ultimately they were like, nah, let's go to the mall. So, interesting, kind of sidebar.
So the mural that's there now, is that on the original brick, or is that on a different material?
This is on brick.
But is it is it the original brick from Penny's, or is it just brick that's there?
I think it's original. Okay. It most likely is original. It has the same pattern, volume, same proportion. It doesn't look like it was added later. So. You can see in the old photo these vents here. These mechanical vents. Mm-hmm. The original, right there. Mm-hmm. So, it feels original to me. And there may have been some repairs, but in general, that's probably original.
So, Peter, are you hoping to close out on historical questions and then start getting feedback on design and stuff?
Yeah, I just want to make sure I don't rush through that piece, because it's an important part of the conversation. So, yeah, so we can pivot. Let's take a look at it. Here's where we are today, and I want to talk a little bit about what our
design proposal is kind of going forward from here. So you guys have seen some of the elevations. Let me just go ahead and hit that one before and after. And I want to talk about the goals. So when the historic when the Heritage Overlay District was put into place, the three of the principal goals were to number one, preserve key buildings in the district along Main Street. Okay, and there are some very nice ones, including one directly across the street from us. And that was one of the, I think at the time this was written, you guys would probably know better than I, but it feels like that was the primary intent, to really preserve those key buildings. The second piece was to, for buildings that weren't listed specifically, but had nice characteristics, I think there was some intent to retain those features that were important to those buildings. They may have been from a later era. The key buildings are really all turn of the century, so early 1900s was the target. So really the handcrafted brick, for the most part, masonry, early 20th century building stock, I think, was potentially threatened with redevelopment and so on, so they wanted to retain that. And the third piece was for new development, to make sure that was done in a sensitive manner with regard to scale, proportion, design, and compatibility with the neighboring buildings around. So it's kind of three targets, three goals. And our approach to this design, this building is interesting because I don't feel like it was in that targeted group of key buildings that this overlay was originally intended to address, but it is a distinct example of a building from its time, from that mid-century. I think that's an important point. And so I think we've tried to retain the elements that we think that are still there and can be retained, and also design the building in such a way to address the compatibility question. I think that, to me, is the most central goal that works for this project, that's most relevant, given the intense modifications that have happened to the original building. Okay. So I just want to kind of make that point. So we're trying to kind of really set this up to be a contemporary building of its time that also works to support the other buildings in the district. And so there's a number of strategies that we've employed to that end. And I think the first one, really, that's worth noting is just retaining the building at all is an important strategy. So having a large building that helps to anchor that corner, originally when it was built in the 50s, I think it was very much a statement about, come downtown and shop, and it's vibrant, and there's lots of activity. And I think it can say the same thing today. It can say the same thing in another era where folks are returning to the downtowns and returning to the walkable districts and wanting that kind of authentic experience that you can really only get with older building stuff. So that's the first thing that we thought was important. In more specific terms, I think another key strategy was to just remove this dark kind of monolithic storefront system and replace it with a much lighter series of bays to bring light into the interior, but also to kind of bring the scale into alignment with its neighbors. I think taking that monolithic box and making it a bit more pedestrian friendly, I think, is an important move in any walkable district. This is a great example of that. So kind of breaking the scale down and also giving it a more inviting connection from the public realm into the building, which I think is important. The third piece, that, I mean, the third sort of design principle I think is important here was we want to retain that ground floor retail activity and support that and enhance that. Okay, so we're doing that by putting in a new storefront system at ground level, increasing the visibility and improving the visibility from what it is today, with a lighter glazing, with a smaller profile, with more interior activity, a thinner canopy. I think it's worth noting as part of that strategy that there's currently a really thick, heavy canopy on the ground level, and kind of worked maybe in its day, but I think kind of giving it a lighter touch feels right. So we're proposing a much thinner series of canopies at ground level to support, shopping activities, provide places for weather protection, places for people to stop and browse and window shop and socialize and just basically be part of the city fabric and activity. I think that's really important. We are actually, I think somewhere in the application it says we're proposing to remove the recessed entries. It's not entirely the case. We're proposing to reduce the amount of the inset because it's kind of a dark hole and we felt it had a friendlier presence to kind of pull that recess back for both the retail as well as a common office entry here. So in plan, this would support, this would be maybe the entry for the upper stories, and these could be the entries for one or more ground floor retail tenants. So that's kind of the idea. There's sort of two main entries on Main Street here. There could, in theory, be a third around Evergreen, depending on how the ground floor gets demised, but that's kind of the idea there.
Could you explain the canopy a bit? I didn't really understand it when I was reading about it, and I can't really tell how that's different here either.
So,
it looks like
in this design here, the current design, the canopy is like this thick. Of just black sheet metal.
And is it actually stick out from the building?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the depth is fine. Mm-hmm. It kind of works. Comes out a good, 5-6 feet. Mm-hmm. I think the depth, functionally it works, but just visually it just feels, to my eye, kind of architecturally, it feels kind of heavy and dark. Mm-hmm. And we're kind of trying to lighten that up visually with a, 10 to 12 inch steel, nice crafted canopy here with some down lights. Possibly a lighter finish on the underside. We're looking at doing maybe a wood, stained wood finish on the underside.
Oh, I see.
Sorry about that.
Okay. I
didn't see that.
My
apologies.
No, I see.
You're like, what canopy?
Yeah, I could only see that.
Yeah, front. Sorry about that.
Okay.
So, canopy, kind of ground floor, retail activation, and then the third piece on that would be the retaining the blade signage going forward. This was an important element from that mid-century era. I think it's a fun marker. It works today. I think that's something else that we are excited to kind of carry forward from that original design. So kind of the proportion of the building, the activity, the types of activity, we want to strengthen that, and then some of the smaller scale elements too, signage being one of those notable examples. So I guess the last point I wanted to make on the design before we go to the discussion is just the material palette itself. We kind of, we looked at a lot of options, and I think we settled on something that felt very light and fairly neutral architecturally, in the sense that we wanted this building to be, in 10 or 20 years or 50 years from now, we'd love it for people to say, okay, that's a recognizable building of its time. And it's a good example of a building of its time. But it does not detract from the handcrafted masonry buildings from the early 20th century. Okay, kind of fabric to the really jewel architectural pieces of that era. I mean, we think this could be a jewel of our current era, but also complement the important key buildings from the early days of Vancouver. So, those are kind of the points that I wanted to bring up with you guys tonight.
guess we can open it up for questions or discussion.
Feedback. So, everyone else is quiet. I'll ask a question. Or, in terms of the entryway in the storefront, it looks like that might be altered to some extent. Because if you go to the building today, it does appear that the entryway is pretty much the same as it was when it was originally built.
Yes.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Right here.
Right.
You can see that it comes way, it comes quite a ways in on the ground floor.
Mm-hmm. And yet here are you preserving that or are you?
We're reducing the amount of the inset. It's kind of a dark hole, and it felt like a friendlier treatment at that ground level to bring it forward. It's still recessed to allow doors to swing out and to allow a little more of a pocket in front of the retail entries and then the office entry. But it's not the big, heavy, kind of cave-like entry that was originally part of the what I presume was the original main entry. It's kind of a little bit odd, frankly, today. You go in, you kind of turn, and then you go this direction, and then you kind of go down the hall, and then you come in. It may have worked back in the day. I'm not quite sure how it was organized, but it just felt, it feels like a
kind of dark. Well, it used to be like storefront with, you know, displays, and it was well lit.
So, yeah, that may have been part of the original concept, was, you know.
Just, you know, it wasn't a cave back then. I guess this is my young kid's brain, but I like going to JCPenney, so.
So you remember specifically this store?
I do remember going to that store.
Yeah.
Yes.
So they have product display. And
right. Yeah. Active. The windows. Yeah.
Yeah.
So
okay.
You can see what you're looking at the windows before you went in the store.
Yeah, it was a department store, and the escalator in the middle, and the vacuum tube system. You probably remember.
Oh, that you're thinking of the CC store at 8th and Main.
I think the JCPenney's had a. Escalator.
I promise you it did not. I bet you all the money in my wallet.
Well, tell us your experience.
The CC store was at 8th and Main Street, and it had an upstairs office, and every point of sale, instead of having a card or chip reader, they had a little item that looked like the vacuum items from drive-ups for banks today.
Oh, that's so early 20th century.
But it was on a string. And your money would go up, and Mrs. Anderson would make change, and the money would come back down to you.
So when did this cease, the building?
About the same time. I think the CC store closed in about 81, maybe 82.
That's possible.
And the people retired.
Yeah.
But they had, it was a dry goods place. It was the place you'd go to get your Boy Scout material.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And
I don't want to argue with you over it, but I do remember a vacuum system, not a string system, pretty specifically, where they would send the change through. There was a, so.
So it was a classic department store.
It was a classic.
But JCPenney didn't have that kind of thing. They had cash registers. They had retail on the first floor. They had clothing and things on the first floor. And the third floor was where the warehouse was. And those two bays on the Evergreen side were connected to freight elevators that took the merchandise up to the top floor.
With the elevator in back.
Yeah.
So I think what we're hoping to do is re-energize for the current retail environment that we see, where it becomes more about.
I'm a little concerned about altering the entryway and the storefront in that regard, and I'm going to ask for your help on this one, Sean, because don't the Secretary's standards or recommendations suggest preserving the original storefront features?
They do, but so there's been something that's bugging me, and then Andy showed me a picture. So I don't think this is a 1950s building. I think this is an early 1900s building, because Andy just showed me a picture of Flynn's, which was here before the JCPenney, and it had the same basic massing. And this sidewall here, I mean, it's hard to tell in this picture, but I mean, that coloration on that brick is more, you know, turn of the century brick rather than 1950s brick. I'd have to go up there and look at it closely. So I think what you might find is that the J.C. Penney is a reskinning of the original building. I'm not sure, but there's a possibility.
I have to jump on board with this because I walked through the building about a year and a half, 2 years ago, and that's what I found on the west elevation, was there was a somewhat mysterious void between the hallway and the a wall and what is the skin that we're describing.
Mm-hmm.
And I was also thinking that it was a much earlier building that had had a redo as a...
I have a picture of it if you want to look at it. It's the identical building.
See, I knew
and,
you guys would...
And so
anybody would have it.
In the 50s, we saw this...
Yeah, actually, I'd love to.
You know, yeah. This was a trend in downtowns of, you know, they took their earlier buildings and then...
They covered them up.
And then covered them up. And sometimes they ripped off the facade, sometimes they covered the facade.
I don't think that's the same building.
If you look at the castle side. The Castle's Theater had...
Yeah, I see the castle, but like...
It had around the corner, and look at the juxtaposition of the Kiggins Theater.
Yeah, I mean it's a great looking building, but they would have had to they must have tore all the.
I promise you, it's the same place.
So there was a concrete frame behind all that, because that's what we see today. It's an interesting,
possibly depending on how old it actually was.
Because that's like that looks like you know old red brick classic. Mm-hmm.
So it's. I'm not saying that
I think I've seen
it is reskinning, but there's a good chance.
Yeah, so interesting.
Which means that you know at this point if that is true, which some fairly simple investigation should be able to reveal, you know that means that you've got you know somewhere around the turn of the century building that was reskinned in the 50s and then reskinned in the 80s.
Right.
And then you're you know proposing to reskin it again, and you know at this point it's you know when you're talking about original fabric and record over time, I think it can get pretty convoluted. So I think having a better understanding of what this building was originally would help. And then I think looking at the standards and what they're trying to accomplish, you know because it does have. There are requirements about color and about material for new construction. And so if you do something, if you do a reskinning, you really are talking about an alteration that's so severe that it's new construction. And so I think following that makes a lot more sense where, you know, it talks about the colors, it talks about the patterns of the windows and about cornices. And those sorts of things can make this building a lot more, you know, one, fit in with the regulations more, but also I think more sympathetic to the area around it without pretending to be anything other than what it is, which is an early 21st century building.
Yeah.
So, you know, introducing a cornice, and I think actually the way that the windows are now, that verticality, that fits in with some of the things that the requirements in the code require. It is a little bit tough because the requirements really are meant to preserve early 20th century buildings. And whatever is left of this, if it is an early 20th century building, you know, there's not a lot of that left. But I think that if you are going to do a full reskinning, then paying attention to those requirements a little bit more. But, you know, I think there is a strong argument to go with a layered up of time, that this is actually a record of a changing downtown, and wiping out that record for a full new skinning could be really problematic. It doesn't mean that you can't do something, you know, significant to make this a usable building, but I think completely wiping out that record of change over time is problematic.
So are you suggesting preservation of the yellow brick to some extent? Is that
that could thought? Be, you know, that could be an approach. You know, it would be interesting to see, like, do these windows align with the windows that they punched for this, the Black Behemoth that they've got here? Are you changing the punched openings?
Yeah. Because they're largely horizontal proportions.
Yeah, thank you, SOM.
So I think that's fair. That's fair feedback. We're concerned about the skinning of the building, and if there's any possible ability to reuse materials there. I think the storefront is also a concern. The recessed entry, kind of preserving that, because we have a lot of that original storefront on Main Street down there. So that's another concern. I'm not sure on the wood feature there between floors. What were you aiming for with that, Peter?
I think just warming up the facade to some extent and giving it some texture and scale.
Hey, Andy, how do you spell Flynn?
FLYNN.
Like Errol Flynn.
Yeah.
Okay. Did you consider using brick or stone as an element on the facade?
So I haven't introduced myself. I'm president of Cascadia Development Partners, which is renovating us, and I know some of you. We've looked at a lot of different things, because as some of those people here in the room, they know me, and I like to do quality work, and so I typically spend a little bit more money. We did the Uptown recently. We also did the Yester building that used to be city owned and gutted that and renovated it. And so I like to provide, and I really like Main Street. That's one reason I want to be here. But costing right now, as everyone knows, is a huge inhibitor. We've just in the 12, 18 months we've been looking at this, costs have increased 3 to 5% per quarter. And so it just is getting to a point, you know, the current property owners have been sitting on this for a long time. You know, they vacated the building, they had it on the market. Doug here is with Eric Fuller and Associates, and so they've been unable to sell the building. So we came in and partnered with the property owners. We've looked at various variations. I would love to make it like it was turn of the century. You know, like, for example, we were just talking about Spanky's building. Before they, in my opinion, murdered it in the 50s, I mean, it was a gorgeous theater. But there's no returning to that because they stripped all the elements off of it. So we looked at there and here and kind of restoring that with brick and kind of older turn of the century improvements. And it just wasn't practical. It was less expensive to drop it and build a new building in its place than it was to restore the building.
I was thinking more about where the wood is instead of the wood elements as features.
So just this
That's what I was
thinking. Yeah, I'm kind of coming around there because on the brick, the brick could be, I don't think that's original brick. It looks like it was pasted on later in time. And it's kind of a thin brick and it's failed. And so there's like dry rot behind it. And so that's one reason to pull it off, and it would be problematic or expensive to replace new brick on there because of the structure that we would have to do to the facade. Going back to what Peter was talking about, that's kind of a contemporary feel. The users we have for this building are kind of high-tech, creative. They want to be in this building because it's got an old elevator, kind of like that Soho thing that we're going to, you know, keep. It's got hardwood floors, tall ceilings. So they like the inside, but they felt that the outside was pretty unattractive, unappealing. So that's why we're trying to warm it up a little bit, and that's kind of that's the wood. It doesn't have to be wood, to be honest. Brick becomes a problem because of the cost of supporting it on the structure.
Well, just coming into this meeting, when I looked over the materials, and I'm coming at this not from being an architect, but I thought, here you have this building that has been majorly overhauled over the years, and so as a historic preservation commissioner, what are we preserving? And so I guess I came in with more of an open mind than, you know, a decision on this design, because it looks attractive to me, but I was trying to figure out what would we be, what are we trying to preserve for this building, other than, you are, like you said, you have the main footprint, kind of the bulk of it's still the same. You didn't add another level or take one off or any of that. But I was also coming in going, well, what are we keeping here that's really in the spirit of historic preservation, that we're, you know, our mission is to determine, and also how does it fit in with those surrounding buildings? Does it detract from them? You know, is this, you know, those sorts of questions. So I was kind of looking at it more as maybe there's nothing wrong with the design that I see as, you know, just an individual looking at it as an attractive building, but just how are we fitting it into the other historic buildings in the area? Mm-hmm. That was my coming in.
The comment about preserving a record of change over time, if it's feasible,
You know, if the building's life as the Flynn Building from near the turn of the century, last century, to 1955, that kind of looms over a brief period where it was the J.C. Penney's and a brief period where it was the glass and aluminum box that we have now. So, you know, which it muddies the water as far as...
And for that matter, this...
Mm-hmm.
The
80s. Yeah, that's, yeah, exactly. Yeah. Yeah.
So,
well, so in the issue of preservation, you know, now that the building may be significantly older than it was previously thought, now the heritage overlay sort of speaks to it more directly because the heritage overlay for that area is addressing buildings from the early part, you know, pre-war buildings. So, you know, what elements are there to preserve and from what era? You know what I mean? Yeah.
So can I throw out one? I think the Flynn story is really interesting. I would be willing to bet that building was demolished because in the 20s they didn't do a concrete frame with brick veneer. That looks like a load-bearing. That looks like a full-wide brick building.
But they did do concrete frame with bearing masonry walls.
I mean, Spanky's, which we also looked at, mm-hmm. No concrete. It's just brick.
No, it's a technological innovation of that period. So they were doing. So it might have been. It might not have
been.
Yeah,
it might not. But for what it's worth, my genuine feeling, and this may or may not affect how you think about this project, and there's pros and cons and different ways to frame it, but I would be willing to bet, based on that, the fact that there's a concrete structure now, currently. The interior bearing elements they don't feel to me like, you know, turn of the century or 20s. We do lots of rehab on 20s buildings. They don't feel, there's like buckets and, you know, sawn and engineered lumber. I mean, it just doesn't feel like it's that old. It may well be. I could be completely wrong, but I just think it doesn't feel like, I think JCPenney, it feels like that was a new building. You know, the ground floor treatment, the columns, and so on. Now, again, I'm just throwing it out. It may neither here nor there, other than I think it does affect how you look at the historic record and the record of change over time. Because there's nothing remaining of that era, so it's hard to... It kind of would have been cool if there was, so we would know for certain. Like, oh yeah, it definitely was, and it's definitely the same frame, and they just reskinned it.
Well, those sidewalls are, and I think that that's actually the key point, is that I think you need to have an answer to that question when you come through with the actual application to be able to say, oh, we were able to find out this is from the 50s, mm-hmm. and therefore here are the preservation issues, or we were able to find out that this is from, you know, 1920s, you know, whatever it might have been. And that this is what happened to it in the 50s, and therefore these are the preservation issues. I think that I'm certainly not willing to butt all the money in my wallet that this is a pre-1950s building, but there are some indications that it might be. And I think that you need to have a good answer to that. And then if you are going to, you know, wipe out the record of change over time, you know, when you look at the standards, you might be able to do that and still meet the requirements of code. I think you have to have, you know, a really good answer for each of those parts. And I think that the design needs to reflect more what the ordinance requirements are asking for. You know, because they are asking things of new construction that you don't have in your design. And I think the last part that I would say is whatever the design.
So what element specifically?
It talks about materials, it talks about colors. You know, compatibility of materials and compatibility of colors. You know, if you go through the A, B, C, D, E, F, you know.
Yep, I know all.
And so I think, you know, paying close attention to those things for anything that is new. And then I also think, you know, looking at the rest of this part of downtown and, you know, the way that the composition of facades are put together, because I think the requirements also speak to that. You know, they talk about bay windows, but that's probably not appropriate here, but... Now, if you look at the Flynn Building picture, and, you know, there's some verticality and bay designs rather than just you know, a big punch opening with a floor, you know, an interstitial floor detail, and the rhythm from the upper floors carries to the main floor. You know, those are the sorts of things that reinforce the character of the rest of downtown, which is one of the things that this is getting at. And I think that those sorts of things can really help make it stronger, but also makes, you know, a stronger argument that you're meeting the more hard and fast requirements that are in there. I think there are a lot of ways that you can approach this and a lot of arguments that you can make to justify the design, but I think those arguments need to be really well fleshed out when they come to us.
Okay.
Some new comments, thank you.
Anybody else like to weigh in with some feedback?
You can check Sanborn fire insurance maps. Mm-hmm. I don't know if you have already. I know that I think we have 1928 are available online, and possibly later for downtown. That might give you.
But then you don't get to smell the glue of the originals.
Right. You don't want to go celebrate Congress. Right. So, if it appears that there was a building there, and then it's really the question of, is it the same shell?
Is it
actually, so just for fun, does it matter? Suppose it was demolished. Would we still want to preserve a record of what was there? I don't know. Do you guys look at that differently? I'm just curious.
Preserving the record of what's gone is very different than preserving the record of what's mostly gone.
Okay. You know, but you see what I mean?
Yeah, so if it's a 19...
There was something there, it looks like.
Right, so if it's a 1950s building...
Yeah.
And that's the beginning of this building's life.
Right.
Whatever else happened on that
Forest,
site.
JCPenney's.
Yeah. That's different.
Slayer, and then here we are.
Yeah. That's right. Different than if this is a, you know, was a reskinning project from the 50s to an existing building. Those are different preservation issues.
Okay.
And you may find that they tore it down and they just happened to build a building that had the same basic massing.
Or they didn't and had a concrete shell and they just took all the brick off. Back on lighter
mid-century. Mm-hmm. Without actually doing, you know, some investigation, can't know for sure.
Yeah.
But I think that's a question you need to be able to answer.
Yeah, I mean, in a way, it's interesting too. If I look at that and I think, okay, let's say it was there. I don't mean to derail this completely, but it is interesting because that's new information for our team. You could almost make the case the history of this building is exactly this. It gets reskinned every 40 years.
Exactly.
It gets reskinned, but if that's true,
everybody's done for the last 100 years. Mm-hmm.
But if so, you know, you've got this red, you know, if this red brick is original brick, then it gets, you know, reskinned every 40 to 50 years, but not completely. You know, it's
right.
Here's some of the original, here's some of the 50s,
sure.
Here's the 80s,
right.
Here's, you know, 2018. That could be the story as well. And you need to know that story so that you can say how your design fits into that story.
Yeah, I would agree 100%. We should at least know the story.
Mm-hmm.
Well, and I think we do. As we share, we're kind of pinch hitting for Randy, one of my business partners, because we hear this is Wives in Hospital. He has all this information, and Peter and I have kind of stepped in to try pinch hit. I know that he and Stacy did exhaustive research on the subject, and I'm pretty convinced it was demolished.
Mm-hmm.
But that, regardless, like what Peter says, I mean, it's a transition of buildings on that corner. I love the Flynn building, and if I could duplicate that, I would do it all day long. And most of the people in this room know I would, because I love that look. We just cannot do that economically. And so we're trying to take this dead building.
And I don't think any of us are suggesting that you duplicate that or JCPenney or anything else, but really, you know, having that understanding of what's the story of this, what is significant and should be replaced, and how does whatever is new about your design, because if you're going to reposition a Class C building into Class A, then there's going to be something new about it. And so whatever new in the design, how does it, you know, respond to those history and preservation issues? And I think that that's just something that your application needs to be able to talk about.
And perhaps our application would be revised to kind of walk through the stages of that evaluation.
Mm-hmm.
For example, you know, we went to the expense of pulling off sections of that storefront that was there. And essentially what happened back, whether it was resurfacing or it was a new building, they basically have concrete panels. So there was no penetration there in the 80s. They actually cut windows into those concrete panels. So we looked at, okay, can we use those concrete panels? So we took off the glazing, and it's so packed full of holes to hold up that storefront that you can't even go back there and patch it. So we thought, okay, we can't do that. And then short of pulling those panels off, which would cost prohibitively, that how do we resurface that? That's kind of the evolution to this design. I'm not saying we can't modify this to some degree, even the wood and possibly the brick. We'll evaluate that, but maybe the application needs to be revised too to kind of talk about the evolution of our investigation and how we got to this design. So,
we talked about materials, not really talked much about form of the building. You mentioned it was like that. And you can see a little bit of that influence with the columns and the storefront elements at that. And it looks like you preserved that, and maybe preserved that because of those concrete panels along that facade. So in a sense, that if those panels are preserved as part of your ultimate presentation, we've preserved a material and a construction technique and a form to the building that reflects what was done in the 50s. And you've done the reskinning, but you've done it including those pre-existing elements and using some of those there.
Maybe some of the that element and...
I'd kind of almost like to see that second column still there in front.
The colonnade.
Yeah. But that's personal. That's not a...
Yeah, but I do think that's kind of a distinguishing feature, and it kind of harks back to that period in time in terms of the storefront and the entryway. So that's worth preserving, I believe. I think, the wood there, it, that organic feel... I mean, it's nice, but it's also very contemporary in a way. You see that being incorporated in a lot of designs these days, and so I just wonder if that clashes a little bit. So to some of the earlier comments, it might be interesting if you could experiment with different materials, something that maybe reverts back to the mid-century character, because I think that was the last time that this property and this building had a kind of particular point of significance, right? And then it's kind of devolved into where it is today and the changes that were made in the 80s. But I think overall it's going the right direction because, currently I was having a conversation with Councilwoman Linda Glover before this meeting. I said, we're talking about that building across the street tonight because we were in her business, and I was like, so hopefully, hopefully we can do something about that eyesore at some point in time, because it does, it has been sitting there unused for quite some time. So I think we're going in the right direction. It's just, taking some of the comments that we're giving this evening, and Sarah's comments, I think we're right on. Just the main thing we're going to be concerned about is sort of the look and feel and maintaining the integrity of Main Street there, which is what the overlay is about.
The area that has the mural on it right now?
Yeah.
So what's going to happen with that area? Is it going to be the windows? Does that continue on where that mural is on the other side?
I can show you the current elevation on that facade. So right now the mural's like right in here.
Okay.
So we're proposing to bring the window line around. It's just, again, it's a bit dark up there currently on the second and third floor, so we're trying to get some light into the deep into the interior back here. I think originally this was maybe deliveries. This is where the freight elevator is currently. Mm-hmm. So, well, the whole thing was windowless. So. Mm-hmm.
Do you know when that mural was added?
When what was added?
The mural itself.
I think that probably came on
the
50th anniversary of the Shocklaw flag.
I think it's right there.
Yeah.
And it is a little ominous because the address is 911 and it's got a plane on the side.
The Mural Society put it up, so they'll know.
Yeah.
Somebody really needs to know.
Yeah. So if the mural is...
But sometime in the last 10 years.
Yeah, 10 years.
And the Russian slogan, we had to redo the Russian slogan because it was wrong. And it translated into something that was apparently not appropriate.
That Russian secret.
And on that point, we have communicated with the Mural Society, and we've said, you know, we're not going to keep this, but in spirit of cooperation, we'll pay for something like that to be duplicated. Up. The other thing we did talk about either is that we're redoing the entire streetscape. So we're kind of pulling up the sidewalk, which is everything's cracking and you know, the trees and so forth. And so we'll be redoing that. And what we want to do is put in tree grades. Right now it's just, you know, basically some wells with weeds. And then kind of like if you're familiar with our uptown that we just did on Main Street. And so we put some interesting things in. One idea is to put in these little squares that, like children, you know, the concrete squares are wet and they draw little figures in them, dry, and then you put them in the concrete as kind of a mosaic. So just kind of some things to liven it up.
I have one more question. On the east side of that building, you know, we've looked at these two sides very extensively and, you know, talked about them. But on the east side of that building, where there's that back entrance there, just that little doorway, it seems like. Does it just stay plain back there on that side? I think you know that you're not going to do much. So is it just a big blank wall back there?
It is a blank wall because okay. There's the future of that site will be redeveloped. And so what we are doing, though, is we're converting the garage into parking.
Okay.
Because parking is a premium down. So we're doing mechanized parking. So we will have an auto elevator. So we will come through the parking lot into an auto elevator, go down to the parking lot.
On that east side, go down. Okay.
So are you guys excavating under the building? No, it's already
there. Unfortunately, it was tall enough to accommodate basement. You know, mechanized parking.
Okay.
Yeah, it was probably storage.
Yeah, for furniture.
Yeah.
Slow down. Actually, part of it was a showroom.
It was what, sorry?
The showroom.
Oh.
Yeah, for furniture.
Mm-hmm. Just curious thinking about that access to that parking. Not much to do with the history or our discussion, but will you have an easement to maintain access to that? Yes. Do you own the adjacent property?
Not yet.
We do.
It's City of Vancouver.
Okay. Yeah, okay.
That so we're working with city staff on an easement that would be across the parking. And then if that were ever redeveloped, then that would come through and start the facility constructed on the
perfect. Which explains this sign, welcome public parking, courtesy of City of Vancouver.
Yes, it was a local improvement district.
And I have a question about the blade sign. Is that going to be is that lit up or is it just plain, just unlit signage, the Quinn, when it goes down? Or is it going to be just like light shining on it?
Yeah, it would not be internally illuminated. It would be more light. You have the letters and then kind of a gooseneck or something light.
Okay.
Have you considered maybe matching some of the font style and anything of the older signs? Something to consider maybe now that you've seen that there's a Flynn sign and the JCPenney sign and maybe matching.
Yeah, that could be. That could be nice.
Yeah, kind of follow the JCPenney. Mm-hmm. Yeah,
or even Flynn.
Yeah, Flynn.
Mm-hmm.
Way back. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah. And you know, Quinn sounds a lot like Flynn.
Could be the Flynn again.
It could be.
Yeah, that was our thinking behind it.
Exactly.
Well, my curiosity is if the Flynn building burned down. I mean, there's a lot of fires back then on these buildings too. So, just not like I'm superstitious or anything, but I don't think you'd want to name a building if it actually got destroyed by fire. So just hold off on that, you know, Flynn naming. Just,
son of Flynn.
Just, you know, double check that, you know, nothing tragic happened in the Flynn building. It is that time of year, too, for those stories, right? What's that?
Yeah, I think it's really interesting that the Flynn story for me is new information. I'd love to know more about it, and maybe there's a way to tell the story of the building, you know, thematically. We don't have to think about how that would work. But it may well have a really interesting origin. I don't know.
Maybe you could use some of those big blank walls to tell that or something.
Yeah, I don't know. I was almost thinking as you enter the building, like in the hallway here, we tell the story. Mm-hmm. We do a lot of adaptive reuse in industrial properties, like in the city of Portland. And we try to often find something really interesting to salvage and showcase that, you know, whether it was a manufacturing equipment or whatever. You could maybe do the same thing here.
Cool.
There's an opportunity there.
All right.
Thanks.
Thank you guys for your time. Appreciate it. Good comments. Will you guys want to have written notes that we can take away, or is that, how does that work with you?
The minutes will be available in a week or a month or when Sharon is able to put it into her schedule.
I think we need that. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, I'll do a checkout.
Okay.
I think kind of sounds like
yeah,
that's
a very
good. Oh, thank you very much.
All right. So moving on with the agenda, let's rotate back up here to the HPC chair elections.
Well, should we approve the minutes from last meeting?
No, let's let the new chair and vice chair do that. Shall we?
Ooh.
Oh.
Good business for the new chair, vice chair.
I guess.
I wasn't here at the last meeting, so.
I wasn't. That's what the election was doing.
I'll be recusing. I'm not recusing. I just.
Okay. Well, let's close out on the minutes then. And then we'll move on to the chair elections. So we'll give everybody an opportunity to look over the minutes from the last meeting and ask any questions, make any comments, and I'll entertain a motion to approve when ready.
So this is I suppose they're probably wanting to make it a lot more monolithic by continuing that white stucco around it. I'm still a little not sure about the white stucco. You know, I understand the PBR from an economic standpoint. I get it.
I don't know if it was necessary.
I feel like we could get that.
It was the meeting before. It's just the last one wasn't a meeting.
Yeah.
I'm gonna put it over here.
We were together, but we did not discuss.
No, we didn't.
Nothing.
In that case, I think I said about this
one. Did anyone have any?
I didn't. I read through these a week ago. And
just didn't want to cut anyone off with my motion to approve.
Second.
We have a motion to approve the minutes from the last meeting that has been seconded. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
All right.
I'll abstain.
Me too.
With two absentees abstaining, we have approved the minutes from the September 5th meeting. All right. Now, back to the agenda. Let's move on to the HPC chair elections. So we've been trying to do this for a couple of months now, and we've got everybody present, so we'll do it early in tonight's agenda. And we have three individuals who had submitted materials expressing their interest for the chair or the vice chair positions. Those were Sean Denniston, Sarah Fox, and Alex Gall. And those went out about 3 months ago, so hopefully everybody has had an opportunity to review those materials and read what these fine individuals had to say and why they're interested. We talked a little bit about this last time when we were trying to figure out what to do. We had some members who could not be present. I think the way we'll treat it, as it's been done at other commissions I've heard, is that everybody has an opportunity to vote. If you're vying for one of these open opportunities, you may vote for yourself. That's fair game. And so we will start with chair and kind of open it up for discussion, or if somebody would like to make a motion for chair for the next year.
I did have just the one question. Were we able to find out if there would be a problem with Sarah?
She just would have to recuse herself if anything comes. If she's on the city council and anything comes to council, mm-hmm. that was a decision from this commission that's being appealed or, you know, for overturn, she'd have to just recuse okay. herself and leave the room.
Okay, good.
Wow. Sarah, do you plan on staying on the commission if you're...
I was hoping to stay on until the end. Who knows what's going to happen in 5 weeks? Our next meeting, I will either be elected or not elected. So, you know, that's how quick this is going to happen. So I was hoping to stay on here at least until the end of my term. I enjoy this commission and hope we have some more things to do before I leave.
We have a number of council members who sit on the CTRAN board mm-hmm. and, mm-hmm. you know, sharing the Downtown Association.
Quite frankly, I was hoping that was the answer. So,
I think like with the Providence Academy one would be the one that I was kind of, you know, seeing is that might have been one that could have been considered, you know, a conflict possibly, knowing that the city council had to vote on the tax credits. But even then, I'm not really sure that was it, because our commission is very unique in what we do and what we're deciding on, and city council makes decisions on an entirely different set of, you know, issues.
That would have been, like, Linda Glover recused herself from that. So that probably would have been a good one to... Mm-hmm. But very rarely does stuff get appealed from here or move from here to the mm-hmm. city council, so...
Okay.
And Sean, when is your term limit come up?
Let's see, so I did a 2-year, and now I'm on for a 3, and as I remember it, at the end of this 3, I'm limited, right? Mm-hmm.
Jackie,
yes.
Yeah.
2-year, 2 terms.
Yeah.
2 terms.
So even though my first term was short, I'm still limited at 2.
Okay. Right. I'm in the same position. Mm-hmm.
So you're in your third year at this point?
I'm in my 3rd year of 5.
3rd year of 5.
Okay.
Now, Alex, you're in your 4th year of 6.
Yeah.
Sarah's in her 5th year of 6.
Yeah. 5.5 years of 6 we have left. It's very short.
Okay. Well, I would, I guess I'll speak first. I would certainly support Sarah Fox for chair. I mean, I think she's just done a great, you know, job in the vice chair role. She's been very active. She's been very helpful and supportive of me, certainly because she has more experience with a lot of this public affairs stuff than I ever did before I got in this role. So I would certainly support Sarah in the chair role.
Thank you. I think the interesting thing too is that our elections for chair and vice chair, at least while you and I've been on here, is we've kind of, like this time, you know, kind of lapses over, and so at least if I was chair, it can't. We're term limited up. You guys are going to have to make a decision right off the bat next June, right?
That's
you're
right.
Just going to no have delay. To do it. No delays.
We'll get started in April. Yeah.
your first job will be electing the new chair.
Like, you guys get this on the agenda and just do it.
The campaign begins.
There it is. That's my... I always have a campaign promise. There you go. We'll make it happen before I leave.
Before the July.
There will be a replacement.
Yeah. Your elevator speech.
There you go.
Why you want to be Historic Preservation Commission chair.
Just my thoughts on it are the opportunity to have that position, if you are desirous of that position, given, you know, what your term cycle is, actually does weigh into my decision. So I think you're both very, very capable. I wouldn't see any, I wouldn't differentiate in who, you know, would lead us better or not lead us better. But, you know, the fact that Sarah's got the one shot right now does weigh with me.
Yeah. I would like to propose that since Sarah, the job is for a year, is that correct?
Mm. If,
well, but I mean, under ordinary circumstances.
Yes.
Well, I would like to suggest that Sarah become the chair until her term expires, with the idea that Sean could succeed her at that time.
Wouldn't
just
that
coincide?
Yeah, it'd coincide with a new election anyway.
Yeah.
I'm going to do something very unusual and say that I actually think that Sarah should be the chair.
And hey, I was trying to be Solomon.
And I think there's for a couple of reasons. She comes with some experience being the vice chair, and that provides her the opportunity to help provide some continuity for, you know, if the person who is steps into vice chair is interested in being chair after that. You know, there's a kind of a mentorship opportunity. And I had expressed interest in either the chair or vice chair positions, but I think that that would be best for the commission. So I guess, I mean, I could save us a vote by just withdrawing, or but I do think that it would be best for the commission for Sarah to be chair. I didn't know that she was going to be interested, so.
One other element in Sarah's favor is that there are so few opportunities, and I think it was our chairman who was observing the fierce nature of local politics, and I would like to support Sarah's future political ambitions, and to, you know, and as humble as the job may be, to be able to list that you had been chair of the Historic Preservation Commission is pretty good. And so that might be helpful to you at a future time.
Thank you.
Yeah, I think succession management, as you pointed out, is definitely one of the things that we've talked about and Sarah and I have talked about for the last couple of years. So what I'm hearing right now is that if somebody were to make a motion that Sarah become chair, that motion would probably have a pretty good chance of passing.
I make a motion that we elect Sarah as the chair of the Clark County Historic Preservation.
Second.
There you go.
All right, we have a motion that Sarah Fox be chair of the HPC, and that has been seconded. All in favor?
Aye.
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 All right. We have a new chair.
Congratulations.
Thank you, everybody.
So do I finish off with the vice chair, or do I pass it over to Sarah, the vice chair?
I think you need to do one more.
Yeah. I think you're a lame duck right now, boss.
Okay. So we have two candidates for vice chair. On my left, in that corner, we have Alex Skull, a resident archaeologist who has served us well, put in volunteer time doing presentations on contentious public issues and on archaeology field schools and things like that. And then on my right, we have the very passionate Sean Denniston, the graduate of the University of Pennsylvania's Elite Historic Preservation Program and a fellow duck. Yeah. A little nepotism creeping in here.
I thought you were a coug.
I am both.
Okay.
So, there we go. And I think, you know, one of my thoughts on this is that part of it is, again, kind of a seniority thing. And I think Alex has a little bit of seniority in this regard, so I think that's something for discussion for the commission.
Yeah. You know, this is unusual in my experience on boards and commissions to vote. What I generally will see is a succession. So this has been interesting for me. A succession in terms of you are indebted to serve on the executive committee, whatever that might be. So you work your way from a board member to there's a secretary position, there's a vice chair position, there's a chair position, and you rotate through. So this is a little different in my experience. But you know, one of the considerations that we have on other boards that I've served on and serve on, is that whole idea of, you know, do you want to have that opportunity, and what are your just given the timing of things, what is your opportunity to serve in that position? And that's why I made the comment about Sarah. And so, you know, there's a little bit with me, there's a little bit of, okay, Alex has a year?
Two.
20.
Two. And you've got two and a half, three?
21. Yeah.
Three. Mm-hmm. So that, I consider that a little bit. I consider, you know, will there be a second opportunity? If, you know, if we truly hold our elections on the calendar as we're supposed to, which we haven't done this time. I think, how long did we go beyond?
I will say that, you know, come June, when you have to leave, mm-hmm. I would be just as inclined to stay vice chair and have perhaps Sean or somebody else who is angling for a chair mm-hmm. take it. I mean, I do think it serves the commission well to have somebody with an architectural background as chair, but...
I'll be off the commission pretty soon then to myself.
When is your term expire?
I think when is my term expire?
Yours is...
It's not long after yours, I don't think.
20.
Yeah. 22.
And we'll have to replace it with an architect.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
It
always has to be an architect.
You'll have to help us.
Yeah. 20.
Yeah.
So I have that long.
Yeah.
Just
think of
the office.
You've got more time than you knew.
Yeah.
It can be a little time-consuming, the chair role. I think there is a little bit of a differential that you have to plan for. I certainly felt a little more responsibility to make sure that I, you know, reviewed all of the materials and attended all of the meetings. So that's...
You could always have committees and delegate. And that way people get experience.
I think Sean, you would make a fine chair before your term is up.
What I would say to you, Sean, is that, you know, I was really fortunate because before Eric Lancio, who was kind of the only person who had the opportunity to go into a second term when Sarah and I were just finishing up our first year, when he decided to resign, I had just happened to go to the NAPC forum, and they had HPC chair training. So I thought, I guess I have a bit of an obligation here to the county to do this. And it was a day-long thing, and there were other things I probably would have been more interested in. But I learned a lot from it. And one of the things was, you know, in the chair role, and I think it's sage advice, you really have to kind of resign yourself a little bit from the conversation, be more of a facilitator and kind of try and get everybody else to pitch in and contribute. So, you know, you do have to kind of withdraw a little bit mm-hmm. from kind of your own comments.
Yeah, that's that training sounds pretty valuable.
It was good, but didn't we go through that, the camp training, or was that different than the chair
it was
training?
Part of that too.
Yeah. Part of yep. yeah. Mm-hmm.
Running a meeting.
Well, one thing that I really think is important, I think you guys have done a good job on, you know, bringing people on board. Like Andy brings a lot of institutional history to the organization, to this board organization that we, you know, I value greatly. Those, you know, the folks who come before me who've been on the board longer than I still feel as though I joined the board like last week. You know, I don't know how everybody else feels, but
that never goes away, incidentally.
I'm always learning something new. And appreciating it, but that's between, you know, between Alex and Sean. I appreciate your statement that, you know, vice chair is fine. Of course, you know, it mostly means you're just pitching in when the chair isn't available. So it's not a more ceremonial than anything.
But it can be a key role if you make it that way. I mean, it's one of those jobs that does not come with the same expectations that chair does, or treasurer or secretary.
Bring your own expectations.
And so I think the vice chair could be all the more the activist. And that and I consider Sean an activist in terms of his of his membership. And so would, if you were to be vice chair, it would give you that bully pulpit or soapbox. And
well, I'll build my own.
But it better be up to code, I'm just saying. But anyway,
it'll meet criteria E.
But the idea would be that the vice chair can be more valuable than it looks on paper.
Well, I think Sarah did that as vice chair.
I agree.
You know, the comments that Robert has made about the help that she gave, and I think even at the maybe not the lowest level, but there's that element of someone to, as a sounding board, how should we handle this? You know, another person to be able to discuss those things with. I think that's an important part of the role.
Yeah, and that's what I mean, it is. It's been, I think Robert and I have become pretty good friends over this time frame because we've been able to, you know, meet on issues, you know, some of these bigger issues we've met, you know, aside from these meetings with the attorney and whatnot, and really talked about how to handle some of the big cases that have come in front of us. We've also, you know, had discussions about, you know, our own commission and maybe going into some of the interviews. You know, we've been through a few rounds of interviews now of applicants, and before even going into those, we've had discussions about what we thought our commission needed, you know, before you even read the resumes and kind of go, what do we think we're missing now, because we know who we just lost. And so having that discussion, those kind of discussions, I think have been really important. And those are all those outside things, you know, so being... fitting that in too was important, I think, to just be available and having those extra meetings. And so I would be hoping that whoever wants to be vice chair would also be available to have some of those conversations so that we could make sure that, you know, again, knowing who's leaving our commission in June and who you guys, you know, have that conversation, who do you think that new person needs, what skills do they need to bring to the commission, and then sitting down and looking over the resumes and saying, does any of these people fit that? How do they fit in with us? That sort of thing. You know, that's a really powerful conversation. And I think we've been making really good choices with who's on our commission. I've been really proud of who we are and what we present to the public and to the applicants that come in front of us. I mean, we're not just this group that says we don't share all the same opinions. And I think that's really important that we don't actually share all the same opinions. That makes us stronger.
And yet the vice chair could go a long way to help build consensus.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I would actually disagree with something you said a minute ago, Andy, and that is, you know, the vice chair role doesn't look good on paper. I mean, I remember when it was you and Doug Wilson,
yeah.
You know, and you kind of switched off in the chair, vice chair role for a while, and that's how things were run. I mean, I always saw the two of you in tandem, really, and I've always, with this commission, it's always seemed that way to me, and then with working with Sarah, you know, I always felt that, you know, we were kind of working as co-chairs in you know, in practicality. And every time there was something that there was some communication or something that needed to be done, and we were working with staff, you know, we were always copying each other in. So it was always
quite well taken,
a team effort.
And Doug was really good.
Doug was great. Yeah.
Yeah.
So we have two candidates, we have one new chair, we have one chair stepping down, so there's a couple of disinterested parties who could maybe make a provocative argument for which way to go.
Hi, Michelle.
I make a motion that we elect Alex Gall as our new vice chair.
Second.
All right, we have a motion to elect Alex Gall. We have that motion seconded. Is there any discussion on this motion? Okay, if not, we'll move this motion to a vote. All in favor of Alex taking over the role of vice chair of the CCHPC, say aye.
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 All opposed?
Nay.
I guess I'll say home.
Okay.
Not strongly, though.
All right, the motion is approved. We have a new chair and vice chair.
Yeah.
Congratulations.
Thank you.
Okay. All right.
By the way,
I'm done.
Stuff to do. What a problem to have, though, to have you know, everyone stepping up to want to leave.
I know most of these things that I've been on.
Yeah.
You have to chair.
The newest member is president-elect. Applying the drinks to get them.
That's pretty amazing, you guys.
Okay. Shall we get this thing done?
Yeah.
Okay. Let's finish up in 10 minutes.
Hi, Sarah. All right. Sure. Well, is our next item the Ford Corner dealership?
Yeah.
Oh. Sorry,
you're so patient.
Yeah, I know. I remembered back when I was in college 26 years old.
Would you like to join us at the table?
Yeah.
Here, what? This is around. This is.
Can you reach this tissue?
Yes, I can.
Okay, so my request isn't as big as those other ones over here earlier. Pretty much, we went through some renovations inside the building, or inside the restaurant. I don't know if you guys have been in there, or it's the Tequila Factory. Kind of made it a little bit more modern, a little bit more appealing. And so we're trying to do something similar outside. I know it's a historic building. Excuse me, we've added some torches in the past year, and we just kind of felt like black and gold is really in, or black and bronze. So we kind of want to bring that appeal outside and kind of get the residents to stop, look at it, you know, go into a nice building, they open it, they see it even nicer inside. And when we started doing this, Dean, he kind of halted us. He's like, hey, you know, like, I can't let you do it. So we didn't. That's actually being held up by somebody on the other side. Because
that's
the ladder. It's like hanging on. But ever since the beginning, he's been really big on putting in permanent structures on air, or like drilling into the building. Mm-hmm. And so I mean, if that's not an option of drilling a few holes to keep that up, then my other option was going to be some tension rods. Like those poles on the next page here. Print the last one. So I guess the one that would be more similar to what we would use would be the U-line steel load bar. I found some different ones online that seem a little bit more appropriate. Yeah.
Mark might have put those in here.
I kind of sent them to him late today.
Yeah.
So anyway, so these tension rods would be on the inside of the window frame, and we would put one on the right side right here, on the right side on this window frame, and then we put the other one on the other one, yeah.
So spanning from sill to head?
Yep.
Okay.
Yeah, and there would be zero screws in the building, and I mean, it would hold it up. It would just kind of, because that's just wood, I mean, it's just being held up there, and it just kind of brings a look. And then again, I mean, I don't know, in 5 years, you know, the new modern look is going to change, so we're probably going to have to take that down and think of something nice again.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know?
So is it just one of these, or is it more than one of these that you
So, well, ideally, because we went back and forth with Dean at first, and he was unsure. He didn't know what, I mean, because we didn't know that he had to go through you guys, you know, for any of these changes. We always just thought that it was him, like, oh, no, you know, I don't want it. But, I mean, if you guys would allow it, we would put it on each beam. I believe there's two on each side on the front door. There's one that's on the north side, and then there's one on our patio side on the south side of the building.
So up to four?
So it'd be 1, 2, 3, 4, 5.
Okay.
But it's not just a single corner one. I mean, just because our blade sign is right there, it really pops out the sign.
Yeah.
Like, after we took it off, it doesn't look as nice.
it almost... I figured you were just going to do it here when I saw this, because it works with the sign.
Mm-hmm.
And I heard mention of a nice logo over there. Yes, is that a new logo?
Yeah, so that's the new logo. So this is actually a shirt from a restaurant in Longview, mm-hmm. which is the owner's first restaurant that he opened up maybe like 11 years ago. And he's just kind of been modernizing his restaurants. We changed the logo for the Longview location. We changed the logo for the East Vancouver location, Jorge's Margarita Factory, which was actually open 1 year before the downtown location. And, you know, he just wants to keep it modern. We don't want to be that typical old-school Mexican restaurant because, I mean, for
well,
the price...
Well, it's sure not. It's a great...
Yeah, I mean, because he's always been about quality food. So he's bringing in premium food items, which a lot of people don't realize. Mm-hmm. And if the restaurant doesn't look nice, you know, people aren't going to want to go in there. They're like, no, this place is way too expensive for the type of place it is. So he's trying to always kind of keep it modern. That way, you know, people see it, they look at the price, they're like, oh, that's fine. Look at this place. You know, like it must be nice. You know, it must be worth it. And so that's kind of what he's trying to do.
And so this building that you're in, can the staff, how old is that building? Is that a...
It's on the historic register.
Is it? Okay.
Yeah,
yeah. Okay.
Yeah, it's...
Dean got it put on there.
Yeah. Well, I like the idea that this is something that could be removed in that sense. I mean, you're not permanently changing that brick facade.
Yeah, because the brick, I mean, I don't know if you can see on there, but the brick is there. It's just being covered. Mm-hmm. I mean, we would prefer to kind of drill in a few screws in there just to make it a little bit more sturdier.
Mm-hmm.
But if not, that's no option, then we'll just use those tension rod bolts that I'm talking about.
Mm-hmm. Can you explain how those tension rods...
Yeah, so... I mean, I would have loved to buy one and brought it in. But, so pretty much, it's kind of like the old shower tension rods.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
mm-hmm.
Those you turn, but this one you...
Do they go across the window?
It would go
from sill up and down.
Sill to head.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
So it would go from sill to head. It would have some metal bars, one up top, one at the bottom. And that's where the base of the little cover would go that would hold it up.
Mm-hmm.
And you just pretty much pull on that little
lever
on it, and it tightens it up.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, there's lots of other options. There's also screw ones that you more similar to the shower ones, but I don't feel like those are as safe as one of these would be.
Got it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think as long as it's doesn't damage the exterior of the building in any way, which I'm sure is Dean's concern because he's the one who got it listed.
Yeah.
As Alex pointed out, then, yeah, it looks fine. I mean, it's not in the heritage overlay, so it's not really a design concern for us so much. It's more protecting the building.
Yeah.
Would it need to go get a COA, though?
Yeah.
A certificate mm-hmm. of appropriateness.
Yeah. So this is kind of the, you know,
the pre-COA.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
But our concern is really about the integrity of the building and protecting the
building. I mean, I think the last presentation sort of showed us the dangers of permanently altering the, you know,
right.
Totally.
The facades and the skin of a building like this.
I think it looks good.
Yeah.
So it looks, I mean, even from anyone coming up, they're going to see that it's something that looks on top of, not replacing, you know. I think that's a
right.
big difference
yeah.
in this design too
yes.
that I like about
yes.
it, is that it, you can see that the brick runs all the way through it.
Yeah.
It's definitely decorative and applied and, you know, not a permanent change to the building by any means. It's almost like
kind
of a banner on
a window covering, yeah.
I like the idea of an awning that you're going
right.
to change out in a few years.
Yeah.
Right.
I might suggest that when you come for the certificate of appropriateness that you have like a rendering of what the actual tension rod would look like in place, because I'm
mm-hmm.
still having a hard time.
We could do a site visit during happy hour.
Mm. Yeah, why not? Every day, 3 to 6, 9 to close. Or something's all day long.
Like a talk.
So would we be proving just this one right here that we see, or would we be approving all five, or what would
it
would
be? So, yeah, so when it comes back with an actual application,
it would have all five.
Exactly what they plan to do, so that's what you would be reviewing.
So if it is installed with these tension rods,
yeah.
Does that still need a certificate of appropriateness?
Staff review, possibly.
I mean, it probably would definitely need a certificate of appropriateness. I'd want to go kind of back and look at how our rules and procedures and the code says for what would be a staff review and whether this would fit under that if it's not... attached like this,
mm-hmm.
But then it's before you tonight, so that is also that's something that you all want to see. Mm-hmm. That's your decision, and you tell us that now, and we bring it back to you for sure.
So I think the non-permanent attachment gives you a lot more flexibility,
mm-hmm.
Because it is non-permanent. I'm picking up on something that I think Michelle was also picking up on, which is that if this is on every column, you know, across the facade,
mm-hmm.
then that becomes something that really changes the appearance of this building. Mm-hmm. You know, if it's just on the corner, then it's an accent decoration, and you can say, oh, well, that's how the rest of the building is. But if it's on every column, mm-hmm. then you lose sight of what the columns look like. And because of the way it kind of bulges, mm-hmm. it changes the way the facade reads. So I think Alex's suggestion that, you know, really need to see how that would look on all of them. And I think that if it is on every column, that might cause a problem because it could really change the way that the facade looks. Or not. I don't know.
Because it's a two-story building, so the mm-hmm. brick goes all the way up. I think we have like another 3 or 4 feet on top of the wood
mm-hmm.
there. That's part of the first floor.
But you can really lose kind of this.
Yeah.
One of the things I love about this building is the brickwork in it, about mm-hmm. how they use brickwork to do ornamentation. And this covers up a lot of that. And so if it covers it up on every column, then that becomes lost, even if it is only temporary.
You know, speaking from, you know, not personal, but totally from design, when you dilute something and do too much of it, it loses its impact. You could risk, if you did this at every possible location, you could risk losing the impact that you have by only doing it at this corner mm-hmm. signage location.
I walked by it today on my way to lunch, and it looks good. And you know, the sign, it makes the sign pop and everything else. And you know, like Rock is saying, if it's on every one, then it might detract from.
So it just kind of, just leaving it on one corner gives it that accent,
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
and just kind of differentiate. Yeah, and you know, like I said, I can repair it to just do one. I mean, if the rest won't work.
I think that one is not problematic at all, and the fact that it's a temporary installation that doesn't impact the fabric makes it all the better. I think if you're doing it on the others, then it could be problematic, and mm-hmm. we would really need to see it.
As far as putting in a few screws, what exactly is the issue with that? Because from what I know, I mean, I probably don't know as much detail as you guys do, but most of the holes that would be used, they would be microscopic, you know, and could be easily covered up with the stuff they use to cover up those type of holes.
Well, from a building pathology standpoint, the problem is that those bricks have a kiln dried surface on them, and so once you puncture that, you provide a path of water to go from the exterior in.
Mm-hmm.
That is, it's like a super highway for water to go in there, and that so every penetration into the brick is a problem. That's why normally if you anchor into the mortar instead of the brick, but then you run into the mortar isn't as strong, and so you may not have as good of a structural connection.
You'd have to use a, you know, like a large wedge anchor that would friction fit against the bricks on either side,
mm-hmm.
and it might even, you know, because people can walk past it, well, I suppose that's true both for the expandable rod or a structural attachment, and you wouldn't want it to fall off and hurt somebody.
Yeah.
So you might consider even having a chat, spending a couple $100, have a chat with a good structural engineer and and say, you know, what do we need to do to make sure this is held in place? I'm a little questioning of the load bars. They probably work, but there's two issues. I'm questioning how stable are they, and how weather resistant are they, and then the aesthetic issue would be, it looks like that load bar would build up the thickness of the jamb where it has to sit between the sill and the head, and you'd lose that wrap. Suddenly you'd be, the return on the wood would be out into the glass, is what I'm seeing, and you'd lose the effect, the aesthetic effect that you want. Mm-hmm. So I don't know. I got to defer to Sean on the Secretary of State guidelines for penetrating a mortar joint and.
The blade sign and the light.
Yes.
Are bolted in, right?
Mm-hmm. And you can see above the blade sign former anchor sites, mm-hmm. and you can see what it did to the brick.
Yeah.
Yep.
And you know, that's generally what happens. You put a bolt in a brick, and the brick is done.
Yep.
Yeah.
You know, and
it's not like drywall where you can putty it over.
Yeah, that's
repaint it.
Yeah, and you could patch the mortar, but then you risk when you tighten down that fastener, is it going to spall the brick? It could, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I think the other thing, too, is we do need to check with the building department if they have any requirements about attaching it onto to the structure itself. And then also, if it's not a lot of projection, but if something projects to the right-of-way, too, there's a permit for that as well.
Yeah.
But I think we can talk about that and then, you know, whether it needs to come back for a certificate, what they call a certificate of appropriateness, coming back to this group, mm-hmm. with the full proposals.
Mm-hmm. I'm kind of thinking that the commission review is written, that it should required when there is a proposal for alterations in appearance, the placement of historic materials other than in kind, new construction or additions, alteration in the appearance of a significant contributing feature,
mm-hmm.
brick would be.
Yeah.
So I
think if the tension system works, you've got some more flexibility because it's not permanent, doesn't do anything to the brick. If it has to be anchored into the brick, you know, I think you're gonna have to make a strong argument that whoever is doing it knows how to do it in a way that's not going to cause permanent damage mm-hmm. to the historic fabric, which means they need to know how to put it in a mortar joint.
Yeah. I'm sure we could find someone, but I'm not exactly sure what the owner's budget is for this, seeing that it's just kind of like a little.
Well, and
that's
just another reason to only do it on the corner. Do it once and do it right and get some.
Yeah. Stand back, look at it, and wonder if you want to do it four more times.
Come back for another COA.
Yeah.
Okay.
All right. Do we need any of the other comments or questions for our commission?
Yeah. So just come back with kind of a more rendered layout of what it would look like with the rods and.
Mm-hmm.
There.
And however many you decide to do.
Yeah, really detailed plan. And the notes from tonight will be available so that if you haven't written things down and you want mm-hmm. to remember what we said, you can get them.
Yep.
They're
and the audio, too.
Sounds good.
Okay.
All right. Well, thank you guys for your time.
Thank you.
Thanks for your patience.
All right. We on to new business. 2018 remaining budget.
So yes, Sharon, want to start this one?
So we have $1,087 left. We are looking into hiring a consultant to help wrap up the Parkersville nomination. Some volunteers have worked on it, and it just isn't there. It wouldn't pass muster. And Jackie took a whack at it, but it's just a time-consuming project. So we're Holly's not available, so we're looking around. We have two potential consultants. We're going to see if they're available, if this budget can stretch, and just see when it could
So this is funds you have to spend by the end of the year. So we figured this would be, we've done all the things that we had decided to do for 2018. So we were just thinking to come with to you all to see if this would be what you would support for us to, if it works out, the amount works, and the timing works to use it for that.
Cool.
I need to send through expense report for mileage and parking for Tacoma.
Okay.
Because I drove up and then Alex commuted with me. So yeah, I'm sorry. I've just been super busy. But I'll
send to Carrie or
Jan. Yeah. Carrie.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Okay. Well, so then there won't be $1,087.
No, there'll be less.
You know, the other option is it costs us about $100 per historic site to get new photos. So we could just get some more photos.
Yeah. And then we'll 2019, we could figure out what to do with Parker's Well. It all depends on what we find out from people that may or may not be able to do it. So if it all works out, if we can make the funding work, would that be something you all would be interested in having done?
If they're willing to do it, whatever we have left over.
Yeah.
And then if that doesn't work out, then our alternate plan is new photos.
Mm-hmm. So we have that someone that can do it, and we just let them know which one to go.
Do we have some agreement and head nods on this plan? Do we need a motion?
Do you think that you'll get the quality that you need by paying a consultant, you know, $900 or $800, whatever?
I think we got to hear from them. We've got to give them what we have so far, mm-hmm. let them know the record that we have, because we have a lot of information, but there is some other information.
Yeah, part of the problem is that the significance of that site is from an archaeological standpoint, and a lot of those reports are just really hard to find. They're from the mid-90s, and it took me a while searching the state database to find them. And I could easily find them now that I know, you know, who did them and when they did them, and I could provide them really easily to somebody who's qualified.
Right.
And one of the consultants is one of the archaeologists that we had contacted about the cultural research survey, monitor again, and they're looking into it.
Okay.
Because of the issue with the archaeology.
Yeah.
It's not just another Holly, it's somebody that can deal with that.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that if we're confident that we can get the quality that we need for the budget that we have, then yeah. If not, it seems to me that it'd be better to boot it to the next budget cycle and get some good pictures.
Okay.
Let's see what they
say.
Yeah.
All right. We'll keep
everyone
posted on
two
that.
Alternatives.
Yeah.
Okay.
So that's the remaining, and then we sent you the work program ideas for 2019. Get that kind of started. So this would be a fresh biennium, right? 2019-2020. So as you know, you've got $10,000 per year from the City of Vancouver to do outreach for the program. And then you also have already in the county budget request, which hasn't been approved yet, the interpretive panels that we talked about for the City of Camas and the center, and maybe one for Vancouver, I think we talked about. So that's in budget, so that's separate. And so that's already been requested and hopefully will be approved. So that's $8,000 there. So this is a fresh $10,000. These are some things that we've done previously. So I think there might be some maybe easy decisions tonight if you all so choose to kind of continue the memberships that you've done previously. So you'll see what that total has been was last year. So does anyone have any feedback on the memberships? Do you feel like that's a good way to put your money forward?
These are all the smaller memberships that mm-hmm. we have.
Yeah, so the NAPC, the Architectural Heritage Center, the Trust, Washington Trust, the Genealogical Society, Two Rivers.
You've got them all spelled out right in front mm-hmm. of my face.
I think especially for the outlying North County and Two Rivers and so forth, it would send a really bad message not to be supporting them.
Right.
I'm definitely in favor of that.
Yeah, I am as well. However, I would like to ensure that we're getting some visibility out of it. I know the membership isn't a lot, but so know, I know that the Clark County Historic Museum gives us some visibility. I don't know about the others, but I think that that's something that we should try to get. I don't think that we should make our membership contingent on that. I think it's good to support them, but yeah. I think it would be,
usually,
good for the visibility.
I think if you're with the Architectural Heritage Center, if you remember, they list you on their website, mm-hmm. right? Yeah. And they're very, very active. They have really neat stuff mm-hmm. going on. They're much better than Restore Oregon, I think. So that's a good choice.
And that
there.
One's cheap, too, isn't it?
Well, yeah. With the sponsorship, the Two good Rivers, not Two Rivers, why am I feeling like
North
that?
Clark County?
Two Rivers is Washougal, right?
Yeah.
Okay, for some reason it just didn't feel like that was what I was talking about. I'm sorry. That museum is, you know, every year asks us for some help with their event in the summer, late mm-hmm. summer, and sometimes we help, sometimes we don't. Usually we help, so I would say under sponsorship, you know, if we're really, I think part of... Did we help them this year? Did we give them money for their event?
Rivers, I don't think we did anything with them this year.
But in previous years, we gave them money, and then we were also kind of asked one of our commissioners to actually be there at the event, mm-hmm. You know, to provide some information. And I know we did that at least one year. Mm-hmm. Kind of going along that theme that if we're going to spread the money around and also have more visibility to add them to the list of sponsorships with that idea that next summer and following summer so that we have some idea about being out there providing information.
Yeah. Heritage Days.
Heritage Days, yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Do we have to put a dollar sign against that somehow?
That's why I said there's no, that would be my suggestion on that.
Or is it split that 1,500 more ways?
Well, I've gone... For a couple of years, I've gone there. It's not a very big event, but there, you know, for that area and the draw, there are quite a few people there. I don't know what their numbers at the end of the day, what they say they have, but
it was a pretty small sponsorship, as I remember. It was like $200, something like that.
Yeah, it was to help pay for some food that they wanted.
I know that they also have that grant application for. You know, some
for their
project
pot.
That they're working on, mm-hmm. that outdoor gathering.
Yeah, I would imagine that is they'll gonna, continue gonna come, to pursue
yeah.
that.
I mean, I think they're still in design phase, which was one of the reasons we didn't
mm-hmm.
give it to them. But certainly seems like a worthwhile project if they move it along.
Do we denote these memberships on our website?
No, we do not.
Should we? I mean, it's another way to promote them.
Are your members?
That were members of these organizations?
Yeah, that's a really good point, Sean. Mm-hmm. We should be.
I mean, is there a reason that we can't? I mean, that's my biggest question.
Not that I could think of.
Yeah.
A nonprofit organization.
Might as well.
Yeah. Okay. I think that might actually help them more than the, you know, mm-hmm. $50 membership fee that we
you
give
get
them.
The electronic newsletter from the Genealogical Society?
I don't.
I'll be happy to forward it on.
I don't care in it. Okay. So it sounds like everyone's good with continuing the memberships that we have. And then maybe connecting with some of the museums about what they've got going on for 2019 and see if there's a way to partner on some of their events that mm-hmm. if we have something that we want to be out there and promote. That sound about right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so I'm going to move on to sponsorship. This is not something you need to decide, I think, tonight, but typically we will get a request from the museum to do some kind of sponsorship of their lecture series or the walking tours or whatnot. So that will be something that, you know, you want to allocate if that's what you want to do or not. So that's something we've done in the past. We haven't gotten anything yet. Have you heard anything?
I hear they have a dynamite presentation coming up.
That's true. So the next one, program outreach, I already said the interpretive panels are being covered, hopefully, as long as the budget gets approved for those interpretive panels out of the historical promotion funding that's allocated for you all. So we'll keep you posted on
that's
that.
The Canvas.
Canvas, and I think one in the center, possibly, yeah. And a Vancouver one, if we can make it all work. Professional education.
Can we do the Covington House instead?
Instead of
the Waterfront? Because the Waterfront ones, we
Yeah.
We didn't specify the.
Yeah, we just kind
of said. The Historic Museum's working on the text for a Covington House interpretive panel.
Good thing.
All right, and if depending on how much it costs to do the canvas ones, maybe if we have money, then we do. If you choose, we do some of these other ones, like the La Center one and the Vancouver one. So that's kind of going to come up as when we finally get those costs for doing the interpretive panels.
I reiterate my support of doing a little bit of those every year. I think that's a great idea.
Cool. Mm-hmm. So the next one is, of course, your training. When you go to conferences or lectures or trainings, that's kind of a great source of money to do this with for these trainings. So I think that's a good thing to keep continuing to do, especially the one that's locally that's easy for us to get to. And then, of course, the NAPC for maybe new members that, you know, could
well, since it's in Tacoma, do we want to try to encourage more people to go?
Yes.
Because Robert has spoken about how much he enjoyed it. I certainly enjoyed it, and I've actually already been asked to submit a presentation for it. So,
yeah, we've got that
down. What time of year is it?
It was in June.
July, the end of July.
Was it the end of July? Yeah.
Yes, because it's always, like, the one year I looked at going, it was in Mobile, and I was in July?
Where is the Revitalized Washington?
Yeah, I don't know where it is.
I don't think we
some did.
It's in Seattle.
Is
so
it?
So it's the national.
Oh, that's
Main
right.
Street.
We should definitely encourage people to go to that.
I was
going
to say that my work will send me to that one because I've really told them every time I've gone, I've really gotten a lot out of it professionally, not just, you know, as a historic, commission. So,
yeah,
it's good, but it's like three times as much as
it's much more expensive.
One. Yeah.
Except if I'm...
Here's
the new kicker. If I'm a public official, there's a huge discount. You know, they put out a call. They did put out an email.
That's right. Yeah.
To try to encourage more, mm-hmm. public officials to go, and they have this huge discount for them.
Right.
Which is interesting.
They want to get their elected officials.
It's like $150 instead of $500.
So yeah,
yes,
it might
exactly.
Be quite a bit more expensive for 19.
Okay. So as soon as we get kind of more details on that, but it sounds like that's something of interest for everybody. So being in Seattle, that's a good one to go to. Okay. So we'll keep you posted on the kind of logistics of that one and any other trainings that come up. The last thing we have on here that's typical for your budget categories is program administration. So these are kind of things that we've just been doing kind of continuously. We haven't done an outreach on those recording historic certificates in several years. We've been doing the photography. We've done 10 this year. Okay, 10 this year. We've done, there are four public sites for the National Register plaques. That's a carryover from last year. So we've done those four. So where are we on the list of people, public
there's
sites?
There's no other public sites that want it.
Okay.
Just the bridges and stuff like that. So it's just maybe private sites.
So we've kind of done all the public buildings that people have talked to us and said they would like it. So now we're kind of done with that thought. So if you wanted to start doing it for more private things, I think that's another discussion. So there's that. And then, of course, our local register plaques are now being funded through this, too. So if a city one, a county one, a center one, wherever, is coming out of this.
Sedgwick building,
they messed up.
They spelled it wrong. We spelled it right when we sent it in, and they spelled it wrong when they produced the plaque. So. New plaque.
Yep.
Because it came in, and I'm like, what building is this?
The Sledgwick building.
So that's pretty much what we have, and then we'll talk for more about the CLG grant. That's usually in April, so we got some time to think about whether or not we've got something we want to apply for.
Well, and like the city council hasn't passed the budget yet, so
right. So you
we're
may
assuming
have
we
that's
have
right.
money.
That's right. Things could change.
I think just carrying through the idea that we had one of the ideas we had last year was putting together a training that would be focused on homeowners that own historic structures and putting and that together.
Yeah, on the back.
Sorry.
No, it's okay. No, I mean, that's okay. It used to be a lot longer. We kind of started, because we've done a lot of stuff that you all had on your bucket list. So these are two things that we think that you all have brought up over the year. And we kind of thought about it in two ways, like, you've got some funding too, right? You got some of this money. Is there, do you want to put together some kind of, I don't even know if it's possible, but a program that homeowners that can't do it themselves can, you know, get help by a professional to write a nomination, especially if it's a complicated one. And I don't, so that's one. And then just workshops that help you learn how to research and write the nomination itself. And that would be a great partnership with the museum to do, I'm sure.
Under historic preservation nominations, and can plug his ears, So the city is working with Vancouver's public schools and the library to repurpose the old library site into a campus for arts, education, and innovation. And I suggested they put the building on the historic register, and everyone was like, oh, no, don't do that. But we're pursuing state money, and as I've experienced with the Historic Museum, if you have state money in your project, you have to follow all the same requirements as if the building was on the register. So I'm going to keep poking it at us trying to...
It's a good example of the mid-century stuff that is becoming the focus of.
We did a tour the other day, and those blue panels on the there's like no insulation. It's in the winter, it's freezing cold, and in the summer they sweat, and they're like, oh, we'll just take these off, and it's like, maybe not. And single pane windows and a ceiling with asbestos blown on it, so.
Great example.
It's going to be a challenge.
I'm thinking about all the years I spent as a child in that building. It was the greatest library ever. You know, I was probably, you know, on the carpet.
It's a huge building. But when we were walking through it, I was going, what? That's the weirdest ceiling. I didn't notice it. When the kids would go there when they're little, and they're like, oh, yeah, that's blown on asbestos. It's like, okay.
Mid-century popcorn ceiling. Yeah. Basically count on being asbestos. You know, actually having it on the register and having our review of it may help get through some of those state processes. If they can point to, oh, our local preservation commission is on board with this, you know, that could help bolster their case.
Yeah, I've been talking to Michael Hauser already, and he goes, you can do this. There's lots of solutions for curtain walls. And I'm like, yeah, I just got to convince the rest. I said I'm going to be very unpopular with the rest of the planning team because I keep bringing up historic preservation.
Is their idea just to totally demo it and start over?
No, they want to reuse the building, but they don't want to be hampered by needing to protect the character defining features of the building.
Sounds like so many property owners who really don't understand what historic preservation is.
That's why I think that a workshop. I don't think this is quite capturing what I was talking about. That workshop on how to nominate your property, a workshop on how to take care of your historic house.
That's a much more targeted group, because then you're looking at people who already have a historic.
Because it seems like we've had feedback, you know, even some of the professionals come in here and they're like, I don't know who to hire for that, you know, and I think we've talked about having kind of a short list of suppliers to help people maybe find someone who knows how to restore windows or find someone that, you know, or, you know, if this workshop could actually help, you know, have some hands-on, you know, potentially, or even a demonstration, kind of like when going to the fair, you know, you watch somebody kind of do the demonstration of how to fix the window or maybe show them how to maybe some of these things that I guess, you know, you'd know if you're in the business where, like, underneath that wall there could be this amazing thing. This is the kind of walls that cover that up. So let's show you how you could uncover something that might be amazing. You know, you could do a lot of really interesting things for people without... I bet there's, you know, just walking around our neighborhoods here, I mean, there's a lot of really great buildings that aren't listed. I don't think just because they've lost some of their character makes it a reason that we should be helping them kind of take care of that, right?
Sure.
Keep what they have. If that makes sense. That's my pitch.
Well, that's a good start, I think. think about it some more, if there's other ideas that,
So we went up to that training last week, and the next day I had a 5-hour drive to sit and kind of think about it, listening to Scorpions really loudly in the car. And two things popped into mind, and Sharon and I talked about this. One was, you know, how can we reach out to the tribes a little more, because we really don't have much contact with the local tribes. And then the other one was this idea of intangible heritage, which is becoming more of a central, you know, more of a theme in terms of historic registers and stuff. And the idea of maybe approaching one of the tribes, the Cowlitz or the Chinook or the Shoalwater Bay, talk about, you know, what might be a tradition or some other kind of intangible heritage that they would like to see put on the Clark County Heritage Register, that, you know, if that was even feasible. But, you know, something salmon related or, you know, some, you know, first foods, feasts, that kind of thing, and just see if they'd be interested. Because, you know, it's, from an archaeological standpoint, it's really hard to walk that line between the confidentiality that archaeology has with it. You know, we really can't share where sites are, and so putting them on the register is sort of problematic. But having something that's more intangible, I think, would kind of fit the bill, and it would be sort of an interesting experiment to have some sort of element of intangible heritage on the Clark County Heritage Register. And I don't know, just something, just a thought that popped into mind, you know, driving down I-5.
So. Yeah, we were talking on the way back from Tacoma about kind of doing more with the Indian heritage in the area.
Well, I was thinking that that's exactly what we've given grants to two different museums to transcribe their recordings onto digital, right, to save those audio stories as part of that tangible heritage that we actually have been doing. That's what I was thinking when she was talking about that. I was thinking we do have that collection of people's stories that they've told and are at the museum, but, and that we've also given grant money to make sure that it's preserved and not lost on those tapes. And I was also thinking about like what NPR does too with, is it Radiolab that...
StoryCorps.
That same idea. I mean, to me that, I love StoryCorps. I love listening to the stories that they've captured with people. So... examples to continue with that is what I'm
thinking. Yeah, and I think putting it on the register would give it the added visibility that, you know, just having them squirreled away in the museum or wherever those recordings are.
Mm-hmm. Well, and I know that the museum is also working on deepening that library of, you know, first-person narratives, and they've, you know, they're starting to invest in, you know, the pretty ad hoc, but, you know, a sound booth, come tell your story.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and so I think there might be an opportunity there. It could be interesting. There's like an audio collection on the register. You know, it's recognized as an object.
Mm-hmm.
Could be really interesting. And so that might be a way to tip our toe into it, because you're right. It's, I think our ordinance is also not quite set up for that, so finding the way to take a first shot at it, I think is a great idea.
Yeah, just, and as a way to sort of bring, you know, us to reach out to the tribal folks, and, you know, I mean, the Chinook in particular, you know, we always talk about the Chinook here, and yet they're not federally recognized, and, you know, they're struggling to get that federal recognition, and, you know, I just think something like this could be empowering.
And that's a shame. I mean, I once wrote to them and said, look, can I send a letter to the president on your behalf? And I mean, anything I could do, I'm willing to do. But, yeah, I mean, I really
feel for their cause. And mm-hmm. I think it'd be good to.
You know, we have a military helicopter named, federally recognized. So.
Well, part of that tangible heritage, though, would be identifying a location, right, of something that they used to do there. Right, and then they tell that story. Isn't that usually part? I mean, wasn't that kind of what I got out of that too? It's just, here's the spot where we would.
It doesn't have to be tied to a specific location. Yeah. I mean, that could really be,
that's the thing about the intangibility of it. It doesn't have to be an object even. It could just be a. For the UNESCO World Heritage List of Intangible Heritage, they just got the pizza making of Naples, but it's not tied to a specific location within Naples or a certain pizzeria. It's just the way that it's just tradition. And
they've done locations largely because the same thing. Our legislation and our ordinances and all of our programs are set up for locations, mm-hmm. and so they found a place to be kind of the foothold for the intangible thing, and that's how they got it on. But it's not necessary.
Well, maybe I'm slow tonight. Who knows? But I was thinking of the Camas Bowl in Camas. The state protects that as a plant in its own right. So if we have fields of camas, it's part of that species that we are supposed to protect anyways. But then there's also that whole tradition of why that's of them cooking it, eating it, foraging for it, all that hair, so that's this, mm-hmm. And is that specific to this region? I don't even know. I'm assuming that
camas grows from Colorado to
I was thinking it was more specific to the Northwest.
There are stronger cultural ties to it here than in most other places. Yeah. But
Wapato, though, is actually the plant that Lewis and Clark noted was pretty much only eaten here, and it grew in the Portland Basin like nowhere else they'd ever seen. Mm-hmm. So,
anyways, it's a great idea. I just
okay. Something. If I need a subcommittee, though, that would all be work, done outside of the.
Probably. Yeah. If we wanted it to succeed, it'd probably need to be a
These are good ideas to kind of, at least we're way ahead of this game in early October. But I think knowing that we're gonna do the memberships and then all this and the trainings and then all these other things will kind of come as they go, right? So we'll just keep kind of when things are happening, we'll put them on the agenda for you all to discuss and decide. And move it that way.
And then I did write a really rough draft of a letter that we had talked about the demolition issue. And I never got any feedback from it.
There was a subcommittee, wasn't there?
Yes, there was.
And it's me, Sean, and Sarah.
I fell down on that one.
Yeah, I mean,
I'm putting it on my to-do list right now.
Do you want to put it on next month's agenda, or?
Sure.
Okay.
There's not much on it, right?
Not yet.
Okay, so too soon to say. Okay, so we'll get that back on. Yeah, we'll send it back out.
It would be nice to have something that's really strong this year to ask for that CLG grant. So if we started on that earlier, in January, to really, like you said, if the subcommittee, if it's to explore this idea about the intangible, or to explore whatever idea, it might be an idea that gets the CLG grant worthy, right?
Yeah,
could be. Yeah. Another presentation
coming up. Focuses.
Well,
Shannon's wheels are
spinning. I mean, like I said, sometimes we get too busy with our trainings and everything else, and then that crunch hits. So starting early would be good.
Good idea. Okay. Just a couple things, and I'll go through the rest of these really quick. Now that we've gotten the county code finished and approved, I've contacted all the city planning directors to let them know that we've done this, and that if they are ready to look at theirs and update theirs, we're here to help them. We also need to update the intergovernmental agreements we have from the county, between the county and all the cities. It's from 99, I think, and code references are wrong. So since we're doing all the cleanup, we just want to kind of get that done. So next Friday, I think, is our department has a coordination meeting with all planning directors in the city, in the county. So I'm on the agenda to kind of say it again and kind of tell them that this is coming and that we'll be working with them, at least for sure, on the intergovernmental agreements, and to encourage them to look at their city codes for historic preservation and make updates or point to us, revise their code to point to at least the county, so we're all on the same page. So I just wanted to give you all an update on that. We've got the Vancouver Historic Code update on here.
When you're there for that meeting, if we had that idea about us actually making more contact with their planning and their planners, mm-hmm. to really talk about what we do. Yeah. Do you think we could ask what their thoughts are on sure. us coming out or sure. them coming here or whatnot?
Kind of doing one big...
Right, to reach out to
their, kind of like we did with the city council.
Yeah, to reach out with their staff.
Yeah, because I mean they don't turn over
we did,
as much
yeah.
as the
I think she meant kind of
do.
Maybe that like the permit.
Yeah, like the yeah,
kind of get the intake mm-hmm. and mm-hmm.
so that they're more aware of us. Mm-hmm. Because
we did reach out to all of the city permit mm-hmm. staff. So last year, and we were like, mm-hmm. we're here, this is your list, you know, in case that some reason you don't know what sites and, you know, they're not flagged, here they are. So we did do that initial, mm-hmm. hi, we're here, well, you know, when a site is going to be nominated, we're going to be talking with you, and keep us posted if you get a permit on any of these structures. So we did do that, but we can also work on doing some kind of, you know, presentation for those that are interested.
Yeah, I think it'd be great because when you did that outreach to the building department, you know, the building official came and told me like, oh, I got an email from, but then that's all yeah. I heard. So I know that it just kind of
it can slip off.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. Mm-hmm. All right. Okay. So the couple months ago, was that August? Yeah, we had the Academy building and the Vancouver Heritage overlay, and we heard that, you know, you might be interested in taking a look at it, review again, might need some updates. So I just kind of put it on there that I think the city is aware of that. So we'll keep you posted on, they're going to have to decide if they're going to do that and allocate staff and whatnot.
We just
so
have no time right now.
Right. So they're aware. We'll you know, be here to help with that, and we'll keep you posted on that progress. So that's all the new business we have. Unless anyone else has anything.
Okay. So we have old business then.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
So last month, even though it feels like longer ago, I had presented on the public benefit rating system program. So two weeks ago, I was gone. Sharon did present what your feedback was, your comments to that committee. So they would like, they were very grateful for that feedback, and what they would like us to do is actually come up with the language that would be a category for those things. So we've promised to do so. So we were thinking that maybe the best way to do this is by subcommittee. Maybe we may not even need to meet, but it might be just like us drafting maybe a first cut, having a couple of you all review and edit, kind of start there, and then bring it to the commission as a whole to hash out.
What time frame do you need?
There's a member meeting.
Yeah.
Which may not be realistic.
Yeah.
Could be December.
Yeah. But it's kind of started now.
Pretty quick turnaround.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right.
So,
anyone interested in being on a subcommittee for this?
What is it? I'm unaware of it.
It's it was on the agenda last month, but it's on the public benefit rating system.
It's
an idea that the county is promoting to basically replace the what system we have in place now for.
It's one of our incentives for the historic program is that property owners, either urban or rural, can qualify for an open space designation, which reduces the amount they pay on their property taxes, on the land value. So the county's looking at how they prioritize those benefits, and historic's a big piece of that. So it's working on what we prioritize and what we would want property owners to do to receive that benefit. So,
and using King County as the mm-hmm. sort of template to model ours on.
Yeah. I'd be interested.
Okay.
I'll help you.
Okay, so we have two volunteers, so Sean and Andy. Should be enough to have two, correct?
Sure. It would be great to have the kind of the archaeological side, too.
Okay.
Thank you.
Okay. That's great. You have three.
Perfect. Okay. The last thing is just sort of the debrief on the September 25th CLG meeting. I think presentation went really well.
It was great.
So
you guys did great.
Yeah.
This was the best one.
It was, yeah, sure.
Despite my forgetting about the third part of the presentation, stepping on the driver's toes.
Who's no?
Yeah, give away the ending.
Yeah.
Well, it really did generate a lot of discussion at all the tables. Mm-hmm. I saw everyone really talking about it, so that was really cool.
And having a lot of, just like up in Port Townsend, just having people, you know, peg you against the corner. It's good to have that happen after a presentation.
Cause it's one of those things everyone has an opinion on.
Yeah, it's some better than others.
So that was great. I mean, if we ever get an opportunity to do it again, it'd be open.
Good job. Mm-hmm.
Okay, I thought the other presentations were pretty good, too. I mean, it was just, like, they really brought a variety that mm-hmm. they did the year before.
The travel one. Dennis Luhr, who I used to be on the Association of Washington for Washington Archaeology with him. When Kim said that, the fish are not a cultural thing, and then I'm so glad that he got up and said, for us, they're very much of a cultural thing.
I really was feeling like, why can't we have some of those maps here? You know, all of the presentations seem to have so much great information that they're talking about, and they're all about Seattle, and I was just like, wouldn't that be great to have that, like a tribal map, of information down here, maybe, the way he was showing, the old
map. The reports we produce get read by basically one person.
And what about the ones that are like where there's a building?
I really thought that was pretty impressive.
Yeah.
The way they assembled that data.
Yeah,
and
did it's a really neat.
Graphic representation Definitely. Of it. And helpful in a lot of ways to a lot of interests.
Although I was in on some of the early creation of that data. There's a lot of sausage in there.
Well, some of that, one of the latter studies, that one looked like it was a little out there. The other one looked the first one looked a little bit more dialed in. Mm-hmm. But, maybe not.
Well, no, I mean, they did a lot with what they had. It's just because there's numbers doesn't mean that they
that information where they're having all the dots around the body of water showing
that was pretty great
where
too.
People lived and who lived there. I mean, I just thought, that's really, I liked the way they presented that.
I thought was really great.
I just thought, those sorts of things make you go, however we fit that in, that would be great to be able to tell that kind of story too. It goes further back than, I know we keep trying. We're doing it. We're getting there. Mm-hmm. Just like today with this building, and we were kind of peeling back even further on its layers on this one building, right?
No, I want to see that picture.
No. I'll find it again.
How did you find it?
Just send
one of my magic gifts.
He won't reveal his secrets.
One last reminder, October 12th, the Historic Washington Grant Subcommittee.
Right.
So next Friday.
Right.
And tomorrow night.
And tomorrow night, presenting.
Yeah.
Oh yeah. So I wasn't gonna make it tomorrow night, but the thing I'm going to got canceled. So it's 7 at the museum. So.
Yeah.
And you guys are presenting.
Do you want to send you a list? Of
I think it's Andy and I.
We don't have any limitations because of a quorum or anything like that.
We'd have to be together.
Yeah. Robert, you're gonna do an introduction.
I'll just introduce the topic really quickly.
Andy's gonna kick off with some biographical information, which I think we were thinking it's a little hard to unravel the biographical through over the course of the presentation, then you're going to kick into the body of the presentation a little bit more with the slides and so forth. And I might just go and watch instead.
All right. Well,
it's up to you. We'll see.
Yeah. Do you guys want to meet after this to talk about your presentation? Or
we're actually going to meet before.
I meant tonight's meeting. Do you want to? Are you guys talking more about the presentation?
We're going to meet before this meeting. Just kidding.
What are you doing to me? Jeez. I think after 7:30.
They don't want you to ease into the chair.
Oh, my gosh. I'm looking for a motion to adjourn.
Oh, so moved.
Right.
Second.
Got a second. All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? All right. None. We're adjourned.